Welcome to The Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible and make a playlist. I'm Matt Cadle, pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Zach Paris, coming to you live from my kitchen tonight, where I'm corralling a... I'm afraid I might have a Clifford situation on my hands here, Matt, with this puppy we have. It keeps growing. It's doubling in size. They say it'll stop, but that's what they told Clifford's parents as well. And people have never really focused, Matt, on the environmental impact of Clifford on his community.
It's true, but he's so cute.
They had to have their own waste processing center on site, I would imagine.
Yeah, I don't remember that, a Clifford book. Clifford and the waste processing plant.
It should have been there.
Wow. Is your dog red?
Not yet, but
just
also
large.
Not the size of a house yet, just large. Very heavy and increasingly capable of great destruction.
Great destruction. Good. That's what you want.
Big news on the dog training front, Matt.
Yep.
It's where people come. The podcast for three things. They come for puppy training tips.
Mm-hmm.
NBA Jam. Or inside, what's it, inside stuff of preaching and the text. I got one of these, Matt. I got the little treat bag that you clip on to your belt to give rewards to be consistent with behaviors. That's how bad it is, Matt.
There's a special belt for that?
It clips. It clips onto the belt.
Put it in a bag? You know, it's a clip because you got to have a clip.
You got to have it with you at all times. You got to be ready to reward the behaviors you want to incentivize.
It looks like a very specialized bag. Did you get it at a pet store?
Yeah.
Cool.
Definitely not from a global internet company.
Specific bag just for that purpose.
Yeah. You got to have it.
What kind of treats do you use? What's the treat of choice?
I use the Charlie Bears. They're less than 3 calories per. I hope you can hear that, listener. Less than 3 calories per treat. But seems to be satisfying enough to change behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That's good.
Yeah. We got a long way to go still.
Wow. Well, I'd love for you to come out and train that we don't have dogs, but our neighbors have dogs. Our lovely neighbors have dogs. And the dog appears to also be growing larger. I don't think I've ever actually seen the dog. It's just that the fence that the dog launches himself against anytime I go outside continues to get weaker and weaker as the dog continues to test.
Is it your fence or shared fence?
I think it's a shared fence. It's probably going to require a conversation with the neighbors at some point that we're putting off. But, you know, just dogs growing larger. Maybe that's what I need is a treat belt for when the dog finally comes over the fence.
Treat bags are nice, Matt. And for some of the folks down in Los Angeles, they've been handed a treat bag recently and they're pulling out of it a massive refresh for the logo and brand identity of one of the top two professional basketball teams in all of Los Angeles, of SoCal, the Los Angeles Lakers, or excuse me, Clippers. No disrespect intended, though that slip might be descriptive of reality. Matt, massive, according to Zach Lowe, NBA insider, massive refresh of the brand and the logo. What are your thoughts? As the Clippers get ready to go to Cryptodome, is that what's the new arena called?
The Intuit Dome.
Intuit Dome, not out of it. Intuit Dome is where they'll be playing basketball.
Financial services. I thought you were going to go for the treat bag that is Shohei Ohtani and the Dodgers, but no, you went a different direction. You're going to NBA. It's good. That makes sense.
This is a baseball podcast, man.
It's not a baseball podcast. you know, kept the same name, basically the same color scheme, a little bit more nautical, I guess, but basically it's the same. It's red and blue. I appreciate that the logo they've got. So they've got this. The big thing is the new logo of the oncoming ship, which is very nautical. I appreciate the level of thought that went into it. It's clearly way more thought than went into the last logo, mm-hmm. or really any Clippers logo that I can recall from my lifetime. But, I appreciate it. I don't know that I'm sold on it because from a distance, I feel like a great logo, you have to be able to tell what it is from a distance too, not just like super close up. From a distance, I have no idea what this is. But I don't know. We'll see.
It does suffer. Listeners need to look it up. Clippers boat logo. It does suffer from a common trend in basketball logos, which is for some reason, basketball teams find it very important to include the ball in the logo. If you hadn't thought about this, listener, just Google random sports logos, and I guarantee at least 50% of the logos in the NBA, primary logos in the NBA, feature a basketball. They're like, the basketball ones, it's real important to them. So like half, the bottom half is like supposed to be a basketball, kind of. Like it's still a ship in the water, but like the wake extends in such a way that it looks like seams on the basketball. So it's got basketball thing. Matt, here's my thing. Now, you know this. Our listeners know this. I am a boat man. I've got an application pending to the Asheville Yacht Club. I got a 14-foot hybrid canoe kayak. I understand boat people. And I got to say, Matt, when I'm out there on the water, it's not basketball culture. It's not out there. I'm not sure if it's the best idea for a team in Los Angeles, especially this team in Los Angeles. I think they've plumbed the depths, for lack of a better nautical term. Plumbed the depths. They've gone all the way down to the Marianas Trench of what you could really squeeze out of the nickname Clippers, which refers to boats, which they picked up when they were in San Diego. Because I believe, Matt, Los Angeles itself, not really a boat town, not a natural harbor. You got to go to Long Beach,
which is LA. LA Harbor. If you look at the map of Los Angeles, there's a tiny strip that goes all the way south. It's pretty great because we really wanted the harbor. It's pretty fantastic.
You do want the
Marina del Rey? I mean, they could be the Marina del Rey Clippers. There's a harbor in there with lots of boats.
They could be the Marina del Reyes. I think we've got a lot more options. I just don't know.
Well, it looked like they considered getting rid of Clippers, then did a bunch of focus groups and found out, no, people really love the name Clippers, which I think, or at least fans do, which I think is related to the fact that, like, if you're a Clippers fan in Los Angeles, you are all in. Like, you're not just like, sell me on something different. No. Like, if you care enough that you're not going to be a Lakers fan, you're going to be a Clippers fan. It's just who you are, which I think speaks to, I guess part of my general reaction is like, having lived here for 12 years now, it's abundantly clear to me that the Clippers will never be, they're just always going to be second fiddle. Just always. It's just who they're going
to
be.
It's scenario. They make it to second fiddle.
It's rough. They're doing pretty good right now. I mean, I don't know if they win a title, even if they win a title, I just don't see.
No,
I think it was exciting when the Rams won a title. I don't actually think that translated into a lot of long-term Rams fandom. I think it just is what it is. And it's probably okay for there to be an alternative team, but it's like alternative music. Like originally, like this is the, your alternative basketball team, which should really be their branding. LA's alternative basketball team.
Oh, they should really go for like the basketball, like nerds, like real hard, like advanced stats.
And, like,
this is the hipster. This is the indie basketball team owned by noted independent billionaire Steve Ballmer.
But instead, it's a yacht. So they're going for the yacht fans. I'm not sure this is the demographic. I'm looking forward to them playing a lot of yacht rock at the stadium, at the arena. It's going to be great.
Yeah. I'd be willing to bet, Matt, that there are times in the past, I don't know, 10 years where they've been the third most popular professional basketball team in Los Angeles behind the Dubs, the Warriors, right? Like, it's been tough. It's been real hard to be a Clipper fan forever, right? But I'd, gosh, even these past 10 years, 15 years, which statistically the glory years of the Clippers is what we're looking at, right? Like completely uncompetitive throughout the vast, vast majority of the Donald Sterling era. They go Lob City. We got this situation now with Paul George, Kawhi, where, you know, they haven't made the finals, but they're competitive, they're real team. And yet that coincides with Kobe and LeBron. The Lakers. Like, not that you're ever going to climb that mountain, right? But Kobe, like, retires, and you're like, well, maybe they won't be it. Oh, of course, it's LeBron. LeBron comes, even at this stage in his career, it's LeBron.
I think, too, like, having just spent the last 2 months, I read a 20-plus hour biography of Magic Johnson, then a 20-plus hour biography of Kobe Bryant, which meant I got a lot of Lakers, like, from about the 1980 through 2016 Lakers. I mean, Magic was also a personality, right? So that whole, like, 80s Lakers team had a personality that then built a fan base. And the other problem right now with the Clippers is, like, Kawhi's great. Like, he's a good player. Harden, I mean, we'll see. Like, good. Paul George, none of these people are larger than life personalities. Like, some of them are aggressively not that, right? It might be great in the basketball court, but aggressively not going to be like, what did he say today? Or like, what nightclub was this person at? Which was definitely the case with Magic. And maybe not with Kobe, but Kobe sort of had his own thing going on like that. I mean, he was dating Brandy, right? Like, he went to prom with Brandy at one point. So, like, especially in a town like Los Angeles, like, you're going to have to do some of that.
And it coincides with the rise of the Warriors becoming, like, one of the coolest basketball teams ever.
Yeah, I don't know.
Personality in his own way, right? Like,
yeah. And I don't know how to gauge that, because in California there is still like a Bay Area LA rivalry that I don't know how that always, I don't know how to track that. I feel like my take would be that in Los Angeles, there's your number one team, but then, I mean, this is especially the case in the NFL, but I'm guessing it also plays out in other sports, which is that, like, many, many people are not from here, and so they just bring in their other teams.
Yeah.
So, like, I wonder if they did a survey of, like, the second most popular team. Like, I don't know, but it could be Miami, could be probably not Chicago because we haven't been in a long time, but could be Boston, could be the Celtics. I don't know.
No,
but yeah, I guess not against the Clippers, but or the Lakers. But that's the other dynamic. You sort of got your diehard LA folks, and you got your alternative team. But then you've got, like, transplants from across the country, and transplants are not jumping on the Laker bandwagon, I don't think. At least I'm not.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. It'll be interesting because one thing the logo does show is, again, somebody put some thought into it, which is more than I can say for any Clipper logo that I've looked at. Which is also the case for this new arena, which is pretty impressive to look at. I drive by it, like, almost every day. It's very impressive to look at. And it just seems like they're going to put a lot of attention into this thing, which, again, like, look at the last 20 years where the Clippers have had to just, they've had logo. They had to share an arena with the Lakers. Like, that was your reality too. No, we're going to have our own arena. We're going to put some thought and energy into the fan experience, into the logo, so I don't know what dividends that'll pay off in 10 years, but at least they're getting some attention from their own organization. We'll see if they get attention outside of the organization, but at least the organization itself is giving itself some attention, which, again, is a change. It's crazy that it's a change, but it's a change.
It's the same things to say out loud, but yeah. Oh, well, Matt, have you secured your season tickets for the Intuit Dome?
Still trying to talk the spouse into that, but maybe someday.
Partial season ticket holder.
Yeah, I don't know if I could do it for work. Maybe for work, can we do it for, you know, the Senate should really just buy some season tickets and then spread it around. You know, this could really help, like a corporation
I
might
can't
do,
imagine,
and then you.
Matt, I can't imagine real people buying season tickets to the NBA or baseball. Like, that's just
it's too many games.
it's not only like too many games, right? So one is too many games, and but also like the finance, the economics of it. It has to be insanely expensive, unless you're like way. I mean, it's still probably quite a chunk of change to get like upper deck seats. But do you want upper deck seats if you're going to have to go there 41 times, right? Like,
yeah, I know. I know somebody that has Cubs season tickets, and she was on the waiting list for a long time, and then finally got them, and is sort of all in on this STH season ticket holder culture and like camaraderie. Right. You got to be like all in on it all summer long, right? And then also like has a whole system for selling the tickets for the games you're not going to go to, because how could anybody go to all those games? So like, but you got to be. It's a real commitment. You got to be just all in, not only to go to those games, but then like, yeah, you're buying into the culture. You're buying into all the, I don't know, all that stuff.
I think we're going to have some lessons that religious leaders can learn from, Matt. I, in my life, have never wanted anything as much. Like the main thing I aspired to for most of my life, Matt, was to be a season ticket holder for something. Right. I've climbed the mountain a couple times. I've season ticket holder for men's basketball at the University of Colorado, which was a good, which I enjoyed. It was a good investment. Wasn't an investment. It was a good, wasn't that expensive. The arena's small. They were good. We had Spencer Dinwiddie on the team back then. That was fun. I recently was a season ticket holder for the Clemson University football team. And you know what, Matt? I didn't re-up them. I didn't renew them. I'm not getting season tickets next year because it's so much more than I can commit to right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's only like 7 days, games.
We'll look forward to checking in next fall and seeing how much you regret it.
Well, I did the math, Matt. Like I,
oh no. If you do the math,
I did the math, and buying more expensive ish per game tickets just off the internet would have been cheaper than buying all these tickets that then turns out, because I went the cheap route, because you like, dude, I got upper deck seats and they were real hard to get rid of. I couldn't sell. I had Notre Dame tickets. I couldn't sell Notre Dame tickets. So I was like,
yeah,
well, okay, I see how it is.
Yeah.
And then I get tired of it. I mean, I'd be busy, but then like, it's not like evenly spaced all the time, right? So there was like one time, there was like 4 weeks in a row where I had a special trip to a away game with some friends in Raleigh in the middle of that, right? But I was scheduled to go to 4 Saturdays in a row of college football, and that was way more than I could like.
It's a lot.
I can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, my brother has
accordingly church leaders.
Yeah. Yeah, what was the lesson for church leaders?
We've been going to a midweek church service thing evening during Lent. And an interesting thing happened. Matt, it's lovely. We really like it. It's been nice. They cater dinner, so we don't think about dinner that night, and it's good. They do a kids thing. There's like a cool kids small group kind of thing we do. And then just a fairly quick Holden evening prayer. And afterwards, everybody cleans up, and we were helping carry the tables. And I haven't like publicly outed myself to the congregation, you know. And this one person randomly asked me if I played guitar while I was putting away a plastic table, and I accidentally said I did, Matt. Although I was like, "Whoa, what is happening here?" And then they said, "Oh, well, you should play guitar with me during Holden evening prayer for the rest of Lent." And so partially to slow play things, I was like, "Oh, okay, yeah." And she's like, "Well, will you be here on Sunday so that I can give you the music, like a copy, and give you the music?" And I was like, "Oh, I think we'll be out of town this Sunday." And the person gave me like a kind of a weird look, like, "What do you mean you won't, like, you won't be here on Sunday?" And I'm like, "Well, I come like when it works for us, we're here. Like, I can't." Yeah, if I see you in the next if we run back into each other here, if I'm here, you're here. Sure, hand me the music, but it felt like I didn't meet their expectations for what church attendance should look like.
Yeah. You need a partial season ticket package for church.
Yeah. Get free. Includes like free hot dogs.
Yeah.
Well, Matt. Well. That's 20 minutes of content on.
Speaking of signs and symbols, we got some text today with some signs and symbols.
You know, I've never heard of a Holy Snakes Lutheran Church.
Yeah, it would be pretty great. Maybe put a snake on your cross this week. Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves. It's the fourth Sunday in Lent already. Fourth Sunday.
El Cuatro.
Making our way through. What have we got here?
Great Sunday for children's sermons, Matt.
It's a great Sunday for children's sermons. First reading from Numbers chapter 21. Numbers, an underrated book in the Bible. You think it's just Numbers. It's not. It's got some really great weird stories. It's got letters. Some of the weirdest great stories. Very weird stories. They should just call it Weird Stories instead of Numbers. From because it doesn't have like the talking donkey and stuff too. Like it's got all the grain.
Yeah.
That's got good stuff. Anyway, from Mount Hor, the Israelites set out by the way to the Red Sea to go around the land of Edom, but the people became impatient on the way. The people spoke against Moses, against God and against Moses. Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no food and no water. We detest this miserable food. Then the Lord sent poisonous serpents among the people. And they bit the people so that many Israelites died. The people came to Moses and said, "We have sinned by speaking against the Lord and against you. Pray to the Lord to take away the serpents from us." So Moses prayed for the people. And the Lord said to Moses, "Make a poisonous serpent and set it on a pole, and everyone who is bitten shall look at it and live." So Moses made a serpent of bronze and put it upon a pole. And whenever a serpent bit someone, that person would look at the serpent of bronze and live. Word of God, clearly a word of life.
Matt, it ends on what sounds like a real hopeful note. There is a flaw in the system here, which is if you were one of those original people bitten by the poisonous serpents, too late for you. You died.
Because too late.
It's an excellent case for the importance of communal confession and forgiveness and communal repentance, because it doesn't say that the snake sought out the most grumbly people. Mm-hmm. Just whoever the snake's found died, and were not healed by the snake on a stick.
Yeah. It's wild. It's a strange one. It's quite a striking image. I don't know how to make a whole lot of sense of it outside of that.
I mean, so there's some familiar things here. We hit the familiar note of the people are wandering in the desert. They're real grumbly and complain about it. We shouldn't even tried. We should have just stayed in San Diego and been the Clippers and not even come up here, right? And then Yahweh sends the Black Mamba, and they're like, okay, I ran out of, I can't make
it's
that.
It's pretty good, though. It's good.
It was pretty good for a bit here. So there's that familiar note. Sometimes in response, right, God does rains manna from heaven. But here, God chooses a different option, which in my notes from last week, it said Jesus chooses violence, right? Jesus goes to the temple and things get real, starts throwing punches and throwing people out, makes a whip of cords. But here, God sends snakes instead of manna. You choose which one you think is more appealing. So that part is strange. And then, you know, it's here, I think, because of how incredibly like cruciform it portends the cross, in which the instrument of death is the instrument of life. So that's the real Easter-y shadow of Good Friday falling on it. If you try to read a why into it, it's not super satisfying. So maybe don't ask that question. in your preaching, at least, and hold it in the same breadth of, hold it the same way that you hold. This isn't God's first time sending non-mammalian species, right? Locusts are in the arsenal. God has also sent frogs right there. Frogs, at some point, one of the plagues. God is capable of sending a lot of creatures, a lot of creepy crawlies, which is, you also need to hear in that as a rebuttal of the complaint that the Israelites have, that why did you lead us into the wilderness? Because you can't control things in the wilderness. Because if you could control things in the wilderness, we'd have food and safety. And then God says, oh, like, well, actually, I do control wilderness, right? So here, have some nature. So there's a rebuttal there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it's another good reminder that the Bible is not just a book of clear moral lessons and fables with clear moral teachings attached to them. There is sin and repentance here, but there's also some weirdness that's beyond us. There's some, God's ways are not our ways. There's some healing comes from these unexpected places. I mean, the way that you put it was like from the place of death. I mean, like that's definitely the way to go. That it's not what we might expect, and that I think is a good place to go in. I also think there's some art going on in here too. So I don't know if you're going to preach a sermon about the creative arts, but notice that the Lord is not saying take a poisonous snake and put it. He's saying make one. So you're supposed to craft a poisonous snake and then put it on this. So I don't know
God sounds craft.
Yeah, I guess I'm a craft project. Which again, I know I'm being flipped, but there's something about like, I guess it is something about the importance of symbols, right? Like, I do think there's something to mine there, but it's not a clear moral thing. It's more, I don't know. It's more giving a lens to where God is. That God is in the danger as well. It's the fire good, but also bad piece, right? That like, it's not a tame lion. Some of that kind of deal.
This story is good news for one group, Matt. It's good news for snakes. Snakes have been redeemed in the Torah, right? Snakes, you typically think of biblically, the ultimate bad guy shows up, ruins everything. Here, the snake is fully redeemed. It's the only path to life with Yahweh here.
Right, yeah.
So within our conversation about the Bible, it doesn't get enough. I mean, I think there would be a really neat angle to take to one of the Bible's bad boys of the Bible redeemed this week.
Yeah.
Lent 4.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way in. Yep.
Preach it from the snake's perspective.
Yes.
Yeah. I was just under a rock. Then the next thing I know, I'm flying through the sky, getting yeeted by the hand of the Holy One.
When you do it, when you write from the snake's perspective, just make sure that you emphasize the S's throughout. And people will understand. They'll understand what you're doing. It'll be great.
You'll get no complaints about whether people can hear you or not.
Oh, what's happening in the gospel?
Oh, it's the classic snake story of the gospels, Matt. That's why everybody talks about it. We're in John chapter 3. Jesus said, this is what people, they talk about this at football games, they put it on their cars. Jesus said, just as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whoever believes in him may have eternal life. For God so loved the world that he gave his only sons, that everyone who believes in him may not perish, but may have eternal life. Indeed, God did not send the Son into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be saved through him. Those who believe in him are not condemned, but those who do not believe are condemned already, because they have not believed in the name of the only Son of God. And this is the judgment, that the light has come into the world, and people love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. For all who do evil hate the light and do not come to the light, so their deeds may not be exposed. But those who do what is true come to the light, so that it may be seen clearly their deeds have been done in God. The gospel, the good news of the Lord, Matt.
Praise to your Christ.
I always found this one to be a difficult one to preach on, Matt, because it's everybody knows it, but it's a lot of John, that kind of John language that sometimes is veers into word salad. I mean, I like the snake thing, the snake angle in here. Jesus is pointing back to the snake story in Numbers that we get in the Old Testament. So that's helpful and making that connection to the cross that's coming even more clear. The interesting thing that came up to me, those who do not believe are already condemned, you could use that to help reinterpret the sending of snakes is not the condemnation of the people. They were already in the wilderness. They were already in nature. So it's not like there's a way to hear that first story as not as God like condemning them, right? But does that make sense? It makes sense in my head. Is it like they were already in nature. Now there are snakes. Yeah, there's snakes in the wilderness. That's how the wilderness works. You were in the wilderness. You're still in the wilderness. What does it mean that God sent the serpents? I'm not sure. But maybe just pout leveled up the wilderness, but they were already there. I suspect there were already snakes in the desert, places the reptiles like. So maybe that's some good news, I guess. The classic like Lutheran pastor move is to really emphasize John 17. I feel like that the second part of For God So Loved the World, but God did not send the Son to the world to condemn it, but in order that the world might be saved through him. It does, I think, maybe be worth being honest to say that it feels like John's contradicting himself a bit here. Like, the point of Jesus is not to condemn the world, and yet there are those in the world who are already condemned. That's important. That's reading it. It reads like a slight distinction, but it's probably a critical one.
Yeah. Do you think the argument for that Old Testament reading that then maybe bleeds into this one? So if like the snakes are already in the wilderness, did God not actually send the snakes? Is that this sort of weird interpretation of the people? Like, if you're going to do something from the snake's perspective, you could do a narrative. This is bold. You could do a narrative from God's perspective. I didn't send those snakes, but here's how I tried to give them healing.
How about this? How about this, Matt? God did send the snakes, right? Because there's a sense in which, you know, if God, in Torah especially, right, God creates things. God creates snakes. It's a part of the created order. God sent them. Maybe there's something about the way that the people of Israel are living in and not appreciating their neighbors, their wilderness neighbors, that causes them to be bitten by poisonous snakes.
Yeah.
Because as a person who does not like snakes, I've been pretty good about not being bitten by poisonous ones. We, like, most of nature is actually pretty good at not in mass getting bitten by poisonous snakes.
Yeah. I guess the other angle that I would go, if I had to preach on this, and I'm not, because once again, we left the lectionary behind, but if I was going to preach on this, I wonder, so another angle or another illustration that I've used is like, this is a medical symbol, right? Like to see a snake on a pole is like a classical medical symbol. Maybe I'm conflating different things, but I think it's like, which means that like when we see that symbol today, we think doctor, we think hospital, we think place of healing. When we see that sign, we associate that sign with there's going to be some kind of healing here. This is where I can find some kind of physical healing when I see that image. And so maybe then to build on that is like, what is the sign that we as the church are putting into the world? And do people see our sign and think, oh yeah, that's definitely going to be a place of healing? For a time, like, there were folks in, sometimes I'll get the suggestion, hey, we just got to put more crosses on this church. We got to get a lot more crosses so people can see that it's a church, because they'll see the crosses and they'll think it's a church. And the assumption there is that when people see cross, they'll be like, yeah, I'm going to find good news in that place. I just don't think that's necessarily what people mm-hmm. think when they see cross. Maybe they should, and maybe we should just say that in a, oh, we should just lift high the cross, which is fine. But is there another way to, for us to communicate who we are? Is there a way to communicate this is a place of healing? And what would that look like? Maybe it's signs through our actions. Maybe it's signs, not through actions, maybe it's signs through healing and through signs and symbols and creative arts. But what do those signs look like so that when people see it, they go, this is a place of healing? And I wonder if that is a way to open up a conversation with people to say, what could we put forth into the world where people see it and say, that's a place of healing?
It turns out, Matt, you were referencing Caduceus, which is the staff that the Greek god Hermes held, which could heal people.
Yeah, see, I thought there was some other like Greek connection. So it's like, that's the other thing. It's like there's some syncretism happening here too, which is interesting.
Not the only tradition to identify the like, backwards ways of things.
Yeah.
Worth pointing out in lifting high, if not the cross, the reality that the snakes are not the condemned ones. If we connect these stories, right, it's mm-hmm. the people who, the way I'm reading this right now, who are unable to live with the snakes who are condemned. And so, right, like, so hearing what Jesus says through that lens, I think can help us to see it a little less us and them-ish, so that the condemned in the world aren't the snakes, right? They're us. They are the insider group. Mm-hmm. The insiders, it's the chosen people who are wandering around the desert. Those are the condemned people in this story. If we read these stories through one another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, hopefully that helps you, dear preacher. What do we?
There are a lot of churches with boats on them, Matt. There's a lot of boat imagery in a lot of churches. How the tops of sanctuaries mimic the bottoms of boats, right?
Yeah.
Ebenezer.
Yeah, what's an Ebenezer?
I think it's just a word for a boat.
Is it really?
Yeah.
So we look it up. Enjoy this pause.
Hopefully our editing machine will work.
Yeah, because you go, here I raise my Ebenezer. So how would you... What is it? It's a stone.
Helpful stone. Stone
of help. Stone of help.
Ebenezer boat. Let's see what here.
You should definitely call your boat Ebenezer. I hope that you spray paint that across your boat.
Sure will. I'll talk to the boys down at the yacht club, see if they get somebody who's good at this work. The most important thing I got to get installed in this boat, Matt, is a speaker system.
Speaker system?
So I can play the playlist off the boat. As a segue.
Nice segue. What are we listening to this week?
Matt, there's a new album out this week. I don't know if you heard it. People have been talking about it. Someone has released a new album. There's one new album this week, and it's an album by Hooray for the Riff Raff, who I really enjoyed. Chandler here in Asheville turned me on to the new album, and it's pretty good. I'm still trying to find my way fully into it, but there is a track called Snake Plants, The Past Is Still Alive, which fits nicely for the text this week. So check it out. Hooray for the riffraff. The late great, perhaps he was bitten by a snake. And who among us hasn't been bitten by a snake? By some sort of snake. He was certainly bit by a snake. The late great Towns Van Zandt has a snake song. That's a pretty good one. You should check it out. And then you gotta lift things up. And that's what our good friend of the podcast, Rihanna, did. Which he sang on the Songs from Wakanda soundtrack. Lift Me Up. It's a good one.
How about that one? How about that?
Darius Rucker covered it, and it's not very good.
That's too bad. Oh, well, I'm listening to, when I think about signs and symbols, what better song than The Sign by Ace of Base, which I recently played for my children. What a classic. What a classic. I definitely had that album.
You'll see the cassette case.
Oh, The Sign by Ace of Base. Snake Eyes by Mumford & Sons. Mumford & Sons, the whole vibe. They've had a roller coaster of a career, but they have a song called Snake Eyes. And it's got a vibe. And then one of my favorites, Joy Ladekin, who has Look Up. And that's my playlist.
The refrain there to that Rihanna song is like, lift me up, hold me down, right? I think.
Yeah.
Which I think gets to some of the cruciform stuff going on here.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. We'd be remiss if we didn't also acknowledge, you know, last week we talked about Beyonce, mm-hmm. and then after we did that, her song went to number one. So I assume that's the Vinyl Preacher bump in action right there. Yeah.
One more celebrity benefiting from the Vinyl Preacher.
So you're welcome, Beyonce. You're welcome.
You're welcome. Come on the podcast. Eventually we'll talk about it. We'll reach out to your mom through Matt.
Well, it's been real.
Real Vine.